Again, I warn you, what you're about to hear is going to be very disturbing. Major Dames was on Nightline. He was connected with the government's remote viewing project, ongoing for 20 years, they admitted. He now has a private company called SciTech. That's the Major's background. Keep that in mind as you listen to the following interview. Roll it, Oregon. I got a fax a little while ago from Major Ed Dames. He is president of SciTech. They do remote viewing. It was the subject of Nightline. You'll recall the government, over many years now, has dumped a lot of money and time and effort into remote viewing. So it's not as crazy as it might seem. The fax from Major Dame says the jet stream is beginning to shift and writh. In several years, it will sporadically drop down near the deck. We are the deck here. Look forward to catastrophic weather changes and very dark skies within the next few years. 125 mile per hour microbursts, 300 mile per hour grazing winds pick up lots of dust. And he says, I'll save the really grim environmental stuff for later. And I managed to get him on the line. I know it's very, very late. Major, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
Let's see, where to begin. This is a pretty serious fact, but you know, it's backed up by another little news item I've got. People saying that suddenly that the weather we've been having is unusual, is not normal, is not cyclical, that something is going on, and that seems to be exactly what you're saying. What can you tell us?
We have the company, SciTech, in addition to our training and our high-level contracts that we perform for various agencies and corporations, we have two in-house projects. One is an in-house study, an environmental study, and the other is a project that we call Project Starman. These are our own projects, initiative projects, if you will. The environmental study has been ongoing for about 2 years now. It'll probably take us another year to finalize our results, if we have another year. And basically, using technical remote viewing, the same methods we use to track terrorists for the government and to find hostages, and to cross-cue other intelligence systems during the Gulf War, we use these methods for peaceful purposes. SciTech civilianized the technology.
Right.
We began to download data indicating that human babies would be dying, so many human babies. And so I won't get into all the technical aspects of this, but to make a long story short here, it appears that we're dealing with a very immunosuppressed planet in technological shorthand. Babies will begin to die, I think, because of this. Many human babies. If you look at the surroundings now in terms of the biosphere, we will probably not have any frogs left on the planet.
I've seen stories about disappearing frogs.
Yeah,
that's right.
What's happening? Our work indicates, again, not finished studies, but our own study indicates that shortwave ultraviolet is killing frogs' eggs. Eggs are laid in shallow parts of the water, and they're deionizing radiation from the UVB, the short ultraviolet rays, are killing, first mutating and now killing the eggs. So that is one aspect that we're looking at. So we have dying human babies. Essentially, what it appears to be is allegorically like the planet is administering its own antibiotics. Antibiotics to take off or to take out something that is ailing its surface.
Us.
Yeah, and ultraviolet is a good way of accelerating that. So you'll see a lot of mutations, of course, in bacteria and viruses, particularly that bacteria. That's the information we have. Again, our report won't be finished for another year. But I thought I would tip you off, particularly about the problem with babies. It appears that there is a bovine AIDS that is developing. And this will jump ship, and it's transmitted by dairymen who will use the same needle to inject hormones in their dairy cows. Of course, they'll deny this until they can't any longer. But this bovine AIDS will become a toxicological insult, that's the terminology in toxicology, to human babies whose immune systems are nascent, and they will die in relatively large numbers.
Okay.
So not something to look forward to, but sometimes the, you know, the facts or that kind of a warning will serve to get a lot of mothers on putting their babies on mother's milk, human mother's milk, and perhaps milk substitutes. We're looking at some other problems too, broken reactors, atomic reactors in the former East Bloc countries. The maintenance is not being pulled the way it used to be. So we're going to stress ourselves out radiation-wise too, from both ends. Ionizing radiation from above, that's because the ozone layer holds, and from below, ion problems.
What about the climate? You know, arguably the hurricane season and now the tornado season have been horrible. I mean, absolutely horrible.
Yeah, we're looking at it. Before our study, we did not realize how delicately balanced the Earth's environment was. We assumed that it could reestablish homeostasis or equilibrium quite easily after drastic changes, but that was not true. I was amazed at how delicately balanced the planet was, the ecosphere, and the geophysics.
Right.
And it looks like the atmosphere is degrading very rapidly at timelines that we thought were out in the decades are now less than a decade. And that is resulting in the jet stream. Specifically, one of the things that we looked at was the jet stream over North America. And we're predicting that the jet stream will begin to, as I mentioned in the facts, twist and writhe and start to drop down and graze the surface of the Earth or come near it. Jet stream moves about 300 miles an hour, but it will produce chaotic effects among those probably microbursts and other things. It will pick up a lot of dust. There will be a lot of dust in the air, very dark skies. The vicissitudes of these weather changes will preclude growing crops the way we have ever grown them before. Either you grow them underground or in very solid buildings or in hermetically sealed units.
How close?
Plexiglass structures.
How close to this are we?
Again, my company is 1 year out from a final report, but I'd say we're looking at from 4 to 6 years between where the stuff really hits the fan. That means that you're going to have to start going indoors for long periods of time because of the high winds. And, we'll have water and crop problems to boot.
And what is this all related? Now, you talked about babies dying, immunological changes, our immune systems weakening or being weakened, and the climate changes. Is this all being produced or done by, is the same effect behind it somewhere?
I'm not certain. I'm not certain if the two are correlated. All I'm saying is that when we work the way that we work, we see these parallel tracks, the degradation of the atmosphere in conjunction with very rapid mutations and extremely serious epidemics and pandemics, mostly bacteriological, to the point where the Center for Disease Control, along with many laboratories, will not be able to keep up with vaccines, the bacteriologic mutations and their subsequent epidemics, epidemiologically speaking, will run ahead of our ability to counter them, producing very serious epidemics, in particularly third world countries, Africa, and even the developed countries like China.
Major, what probability do you assign to this all occurring as you have suggested it will occur? In other words, is there some probability that a different path can be...
No, the answer is no. I wouldn't be talking to you on the phone. When I speak about SciTech studies, I put my company's reputation on the line. Here we just have general and cursory results, and there's no... my signature is not on a report to the public yet, but it's the confidence factors are high enough to tell you that this is what is going to occur. As far as we're concerned in the company, the timelines have not been established. But as far as we're concerned, and we have double-checked this, it's too late. There's no remedial action.
God, what advice do you give to individuals? If somebody called you and said, all right, I believe you. All this is going to happen. I think you're right.
Okay.
What can I do?
All right. You need to move to a cold climate. The colder the better. Here are the parameters.
Great.
Cold climates will stay the introduction of tropical disease. African equine encephalitis, chikungunya, Ebola, a number of other orphan diseases are tropical, and they can't mutate fast enough to become other than latent in cold weather. So cold climates, they will be of survival value, as well as presenting the opportunity for fresh water. Snowpacks have lots of fresh water. So that's one thing. The winds that will be predominant in the mid-latitudes of the Earth, mostly, are going to be very high. So if you could build underground or be in extremely solid structures, that will be necessary. Food will be a real problem, a very, very serious problem. And
so in other words, store food.
Well, yeah, store food, but we're going to have to, as a country, start really rethinking the way we grow food. It's ridiculous to think that we can continue to grow crops the way we do now, subject to the changes in the weather that we see right now, not to mention a few years where we'll have no food. Our wheat crop's gone for the first time, I think, in history.
It's true. Yeah. There's a horrendous drought in the Midwest. What can you forecast for that? Is there going to be relief, or it just continues to worsen?
The crop shortages in the price of food they're both going to become aggravated by this situation to the point where we are either going to have to grow food underground or in hermetically sealed above ground units. Crops need light, so they're going to have to have light. We're going to run into some serious problems. We'll probably have to in a number of years import food from climates that are not covered, that are not dust clouded or dust enshrouded. That's north, predominantly the southern hemispheres. But they'll have their own problems because, the dust is both a blessing and a curse. The ozone, holes, and I say not just one hole, but holes begin to occur. This is kind of a metastasis and a cancer that's eating away at the upper levels of the atmosphere that I don't think scientists have detected yet. When this begins to occur, the dust cover in North America and in Europe and in the mid-latitudes will prevent us from receiving the deleterious effects of UVB, but all the light that's required to grow crops normally will be in the southern latitudes, and there those crops will be exposed to UVB, high levels of ionizing radiation, and it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. The very bottom of the food chain will begin to die off in those latitudes because of the ionizing radiation. So we're in for some grim times.
Major, when did you begin coming to these conclusions? When did this data begin to harden for you?
We actually, at the military remote viewing team, I was the operations officer and one of the remote viewers for that team, began to pick up the dying babies about 10 years ago.
10 years ago?
About 10 years ago. And, of course, that kind of work had nothing to do with national defense issues, so we didn't spend a lot of time with it. We were looking at the Russians and the Chinese and other potential adversaries.
So it was really then when you moved into the civilian sector that you began to concentrate on this?
That's correct. When I civilianized the military technology and founded SciTech, we began to look at this and another project that we call Project Starman that we keep pretty close to our chest. These are our two in-house projects that are our initiative SciTech project where we essentially do the studies and provide the public with the outcome.
Major, as you look ahead, this grim outlook, can you tell how long it will last, whether there will be any relief, or does it just keep getting worse?
We've looked out in the out years pretty far, and in fact, we did a study for the Institute for the Human Potential Foundation in Washington, D.C. a number of years ago. SciTech did this study, and as a result of that, saw that these effects last quite a while. But I'm not ready to put timelines on it yet. I will say, however, that the effects that we're beginning to experience now started about a year ago, and they're going to become catastrophic sooner than we think. In ballpark, I'd say 4.5 to 6 years max. That's when people will spend a lot of time indoors.
There's a lot of people out there who would say this is just sort of millennium madness. Not so, huh?
I would like, it's very attractive for all of us to think that, and I'm not here trying to fuel any paranoia, but it's more than millennial madness. I think that maybe the Bible pinned it down, and that's where it called it right years ago.
I've called it, I'm just a talk host, Major, and I observe, and I watch the news, and I dissect the news and pick it apart for what's controversial and interesting. And I've done that for a dozen years just doing this program alone, and I have come to call it the quickening. I know that you've heard me say that. And that's all I can say, that things are changing and rapidly and at a very much accelerating pace. I don't know where it's going, I don't know where it's headed, but you apparently do, and it certainly is a grim outlook. No escape, huh?
No, there isn't, doesn't appear to be an escape. We can't evolve as a race unless we survive, so that's one of the reasons, that's the predominant reason why SciTech is conducting this environmental study to attempt to at least get survival information out on the streets, because we simply can't evolve as a race unless we survive. And So watch for despeciation and sterilization. That many, many species will start to die out, like all the multitude of species of birds that you normally see from season to season. You'll see fewer and fewer species as the years go by.
What will Major Dames and Company do? What are you doing? Can you even tell us? I mean, you must, with the knowledge you have, you've got to be personally and from a corporate point of view preparing yourself to survive.
That's correct. Personally and from a corporate point of view, we are preparing ourselves to survive.
Well, you're in Beverly Hills, California.
Not for long.
Well, that was amazing. So in other words, you're going to follow your own advice, and you're going to be getting out of there pretty soon?
Within 2 years.
And can you tell us where you'll be headed?
I think I'll be heading for points west and south.
West and south?
Yeah.
West and south. Well, you go west of Beverly Hills and you're in the water.
That's right.
So you're headed for an island somewhere.
That's a good guess.
This is horrible news, and how many people have with you come to these conclusions? How big is the team?
It's 30 now.
30 people?
Yeah, 30. And these people are trained at standards as good or better than the technical military team that I employed for military operations.
Well, I'm sure you've scared a lot of people this morning. What I guess I'd better do is ask you if on another night we can schedule a program with you at an earlier hour, to begin at an earlier hour.
We can do that. Again, keep in mind, though, that these are in-house studies. The studies will require, this particular study, this environmental study, will require another year of work before I sign my name to the report. So we're talking about preliminary interim results here.
All right, so in other words, consider what you have just told us to be preliminary information.
That's correct.
Major, I want to thank you very much for being here this morning, and we will schedule a program with you. Thank you, my friend.
The pleasure's mine.
Take care. Major, I'm with you. Thank you, my friend. www.transition-3000.de. That's... www.transition-3000.de. And I know Keith is out there and will rush to put in a link. Right, Keith? www.transition-3000.de. And here he is from Southern California, Major Ed Dames. Major, are you there?
I'm here. It's my distinct pleasure to be here with you.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you back. You're a lot of fun. Well, fun might not be the right word. You're very interesting to have on the air. Major, I got a fax earlier today from somebody who said, "Art!" Exclamation point. Retired Major Ed Dames is not what he seems. I think you should ask him about connections to military intelligence operations on the air. Well, there has never been any doubt about that, but the last time we had you on, we didn't have time to go into so much of your history, but I think we ought to. This is not something you hide, is it?
It's not at all.
Well, you know, this guy who sent the fax seemed to feel that you were hiding your connections from the Defense Intelligence Agency and the Pentagon and so forth. And in fact, let's hear a little history of when you were in the military.
Well, I enlisted as a paratrooper in 1967. I took a short break to go to Berkeley, the University of California at Berkeley, where I was the distinguished military graduate from Berkeley's ROTC program in 1978. And after being commissioned, served some time with the 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment in Nuremberg, Germany, as an electronic warfare officer.
Mm-hmm.
I was recruited from that assignment to go into the world of black intelligence. And there my odyssey began.
Do they come to you, by the way, and tap you on the shoulder and say, we've got special work for you, or can you even talk about how it happened?
Only in the very elite units. Some of the sexier jobs in the military. And by the way, it's the CIA and the Army that collect intelligence. The others analyze, but it's the Army and the CIA that actually have intelligence officers. For the very sexy jobs, you have to be a water walker, a superb officer. But for the extremely elite units, you are tapped on the shoulder.
You were tapped on the shoulder.
For three very elite units.
Mm-hmm. And what were these units?
Let's see. The last one, just prior to my retirement in 91, I cannot talk about. The two prior to that were very interesting. The first, beginning in 1980, had me as a targeting officer at the Officer of the Secretary of Defense level, at the National Agency level. My job there was to choose from among America's intelligence collection priorities. Mostly those were weapons of mass destruction, foreign weapons of mass destruction, and to select targets and to engineer penetration missions using any means at my disposal and carte blanche when it came to funding, orchestrate the successful penetration of those targets, that is, facilities, programs, people, those kinds of
things. When you say select targets, you mean you were the guy who decided where the important defense facilities were, how many megatons would be placed on it, that sort of thing?
No, I'm talking about intelligence targets.
Intelligence targets, right.
For instance, what really are the parameters of a certain ICBM, the SS-18 missile? What does it really have inside of it? And how are we going to get that information? Should we choose this target, or should we look at, say, another country's biological warfare program? Mm-hmm. Those decisions were left to me, and also the actual execution of the mission after I organized teams and infrastructures to deal and adjudicate the problem.
Did these involve on-the-ground in-country assets?
They involved everything. They involved boxes in the sky that looked down and through buildings. They involved agents on the ground and training case officers to manage those agents. They involved extremely sophisticated technologies. And sometimes, by hook or by crook, all those things did not work.
Right. And so I guess that brings us to, at some point, you got converted from that sort of intelligence work to what we know as, and we'll explain in a moment, a remote viewing. How in the world... Can you talk about how that project got started, the genesis of it?
Yes, I can in both a general and a specific way, but the specifics aren't that interesting. Essentially, the CIA and the Army saw some promise in using naturally gifted psychics to explore remotely, that is, at a distance, foreign intelligence problems. And an experiment was begun at Stanford Research Institute in the late 1970s under the auspices of Dr. Harold Puthoff and the remote viewing laboratory there to take a look at the performance of some of these natural psychics. And it was deemed by the CIA and later by the Army that there was something worthy of being looked at. So money was thrown at that, a few million dollars a year.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a couple of million dollars a year for the first several years. And what we were looking for was, one, proof that the capability existed, and two, validation that it could be useful against in intelligence operations. And that's essentially where the money began to flow.
All right. I saw Stansfield Turner, former CIA head, affirm on a videotape that you sent. It was a Seattle story, I think. He affirmed, yes, this works. Yes, he said. We had one psychic, for example, that described specific military installations inside the Soviet Union, information that turned out to be in detail correct. So he said it works. And then there was the head of the Navy at the time they interviewed as well. And he said, yes, there is such an operation underway. No, I won't talk about it. And I can't talk about it. So everybody way up is affirming that all this went on, but they still won't talk about it, will they?
I never have seen a black program, and this was very classified at the time. Only a handful of people in America were read on or briefed on the project. Never have I seen a intelligence program subject to such ostracism and revulsion by so many officials, and yet so attractive to so many others. So we often called ourselves, I was the operations and training officer for the United States. I say training officer because there were breakthrough techniques that were developed that I can talk about if you'd like. This program was connected in some people's minds with the occult. For instance, some people are familiar with something called the Presidential Foreign Intelligence Board, the PFIAB. And the head of this group in the early 1980s was approached by a colleague of mine and was briefed on the existence of my unit. This man went sheet white and said that man should not know these things until he dies. And at that time, we closed the books up and said, well, that's all we have, sir. we're out of here.
Would you say the military and the Pentagon and so forth keep all of this secret and won't talk about it because of its sensitive nature or because it is to them an embarrassment?
At one time, the Army unit, was extremely effective, and the effectiveness should have been the extent of that effectiveness was classified, and rightly so. We were very good at penetrating targets.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of the years of our operation, it was kept under wraps because it was either experimental or it was a potential embarrassment to the program directors themselves.
All right, if you would, give now everybody, not everybody knows what remote viewing is, so give us remote viewing 101 short version if you can. What is remote viewing?
Let me mention first that prior to its discovery in 1983, the Army, my team, used altered states, that is, we would have agents, if you will, gifted natural psychics from within our own ranks, lying down on a bed in a darkened room. They were wired up to electronic equipment. We would be watching for certain things in whole body states. For instance, there, as most people know, there is an electric flow through one's body. When this electric flow from head to foot, when it was 180 degrees, voltage shift, a phase shift, we generally assumed that someone was on target, that is, in an altered state. And our agents were trained against military targets, many different types of targets, unknowns, so they could be provided with feedback before they were set against unknowns.
In other words, you would go after General Gazarov or whoever he is in Moscow, and that would be your target, and you would literally try to see. Let's define what it is. Do you, when you're on target, see what he sees, see what's around him, get a general picture of him? Are you able to actually read his mind? What do you do?
Well, again, let me hark back to the early days where six or seven individuals from within the Army's ranks were in altered states. And when one is in an altered state, I used those techniques prior to the discovery of the thing that I teach now. An observer hears your speech slurred. You are not operating at the same pace that you would normally operate in a waking state. And we practice against known targets so that we could validate and calibrate each individual team member. That really wasn't, that's what the extent of remote viewing was in those days. And in an altered state like that, indeed, one could be much aware of the mind state of an individual and their surroundings, but we had lots of problems with regard to dimensionality and positioning. We were not sure. For instance, I'll give you an example. There was an individual on the television, I think his name was Joe McMonagle. He was a warrant officer assigned to our early team. Joe was a natural psychic, and he was employed by me against a number of intelligence operations. When Joe would report on a room next door, I would go to satellite photography, look down at the light table, and indeed, there was a next door, but it was down the street. So Joe was not aware of that. Those are the kinds of problems you have in altered states. Distances, directions, vectors, azimuths, those kinds of things.
Depth perception, even?
Yes. It's as if you're looking, it's very myopic, as if you're looking through a tunnel. It's tunnel vision and black and gray, very little color vision. But it's real time. And it was used not extremely effectively, but in good stead in a couple of different scenarios. We employed people who use altered states to take a look at the radio station in Tehran, Iran, prior to our border invasion, our border rescue attempt.
You looked for and tried to find the hostages, too, didn't you?
We were looking for the hostages. We were looking for how many weapons were there, what were the nature of the weapons. Those kinds of problems are solved now, although, albeit with a lot of work, with what my company employs at technical remote viewing. Technical remote viewing is an evolution of the discovery, which was termed coordinate remote viewing when it was discovered at Stanford Research Institute using Army funds in 1983. Mm-hmm. As operations officer, I ironed out the wrinkles. We essentially took the ball and ran with it and worked out the bugs. Those people who discovered those techniques were really the Wright brothers of remote viewing. And we're flying much faster aircraft now, metaphorically.
I know that you also did, so that the audience understands, because they will not have all seen this, you did work, significant work, during the Gulf War, didn't you?
My company did, actually.
Your company. Well, that's right. Well, I'm jumping you ahead, perhaps when I shouldn't, but it's important they understand what has been done. Now, what I saw in the Seattle television news story was that, A, you looked at Iraq, and you looked at Baghdad prior to the beginning of the war for chemical weapons, nuclear weapons, strategic, terrible stuff.
Weapons, stay behind, weapons of mass destruction.
And essentially in Baghdad, found nothing serious. Now, this was all before the war, but you also found two canisters full of biological weapons at another site in Iraq. Is that correct?
Let me backtrack. First of all, before I get into our actual operations, I have to talk about technical remote viewing and why we switched from the use of altered states and why I ordered the team to use technical remote viewing.
Did you change it? Good question.
Because the discovery was, I'll give you some background. When this was a structure of how the unconscious mind communicates to the conscious mind, to conscious awareness, a grammar and a syntax, if you will. It's very much like a language. If you do not have a grammar and a syntax for language, one cannot communicate. You need that. And just as language is a natural ability, remote viewing is a natural ability also. The way that we do it, and the way the discovery had it, a very natural process. This natural structure was what was discovered. It was the way that this was a protocol, a series of protocols that could be taught. And when I and four others of an initial prototype team were trained in this technique, we performed better than the best natural psychics that ever lived on record. That was how our performance was. And so this was a glowing success. We took this success into the black world with us, and we ironed out the bugs over a period of many years so that we could be not only consistent against the target, because this was the problem with natural psychics, such as Mr. McMonagle and other naturals in the unit.
All right, Major, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back to you, and we'll pick it up at that point. The transition from electronics is presently... What kind of electronics? If I were in that early stage of remote viewing, and I was going to go into an altered state, what would be hooked up to me? How would I enter this altered state?
You would have electrodes hooked up from head to toe, on your head and on your toes, literally, and they would be hooked up to a voltmeter or an oscilloscope measuring head-to-toe voltage, whole-body polarity shift is what we're after.
Okay.
And you can do this with anyone. All of us are naturally gifted to one degree or another, some much more than others. What we did in the military unit was to take these new discoveries, these protocols, and that are trainable, and to train teams to do this very precisely and very rigorous conditions the same conditions that we train civilians here, 20 a year in the Beverly Hills office, to do. To become so consistent they can hold a target, a person, place, a thing, or an event in their mind and preclude the inrush of imagination and personal analysis of the data. So the old altered states days are gone as far as operational remote viewing goes. And also...
Wait. Was there the use of... Did you use any chemicals?
We never used chemicals. The Soviet GRU, the Soviet Military Intelligence, did. And they killed a couple of young troops doing that.
Mm.
They attempted to induce an altered state using drugs, thinking that they could produce good intelligence. But in fact, you must be highly alert, awake and alert. A good time to work is after that second cup of coffee in the morning for most of us, the same way that you would work a normal job, because you're trying to listen to this little signal. I use the term listen metaphorically, trying to perceive a very small signal. And if you're in an altered state, for instance, taking LSD or Halcyon or something like that,
mm-hmm.
Indeed, you have the whole universe at your disposal, but it's all coming in through your modem or your liminal gate, if you're an experimental or clinical psychologist, at one time, and you can't manage that. Technical remote viewing, the technique that we use in our company, is attention management, highly structured way of managing your attention so that you recognize that data that's associated with the target as opposed to your own imagination and as opposed to your own analysis of the
mm-hmm.
data.
In other words, you've got to separate your own, well, imagination is the right word, from what you're getting so that you get the pure thing.
And you have to hold target contact at the same time. So it's very much analogous to flying a plane, for instance, where the structure becomes your instrument. And if you're flying at night, you have to trust your skill at reading those instruments.
All right. Again, there was some serious skill involved because you did look, I guess, at Baghdad, said that it was clear. Then you found...
We did not look. It wasn't Baghdad. It was Kuwait.
Sorry.
The National Security Council, 48 hours prior to the entrance of the Allies into Kuwait. Actually,
uh-huh.
We had recon units in, as you might guess, Special Forces Recon and Marine LERPs. And they were reporting all clear, except the NSC was concerned that with pullout of Baghdad troops, of Iraqi troops, there may have been a stay-behind weapon of mass destruction, either something like the equivalent of a tactical nuclear weapon, half a meg, one meg, or a biological or chemical weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when my company was asked to take a look.
So this is after you were gone from the military. You had established SciTech. And they came to you on a private basis and said, take a look, will you?
That's correct.
You said, okay, and you found it to be clear.
Actually, I have to correct you. I was still in the military when I founded the company,
oh.
Much to the chagrin of the Defense Intelligence Agency.
I bet they hated that.
Oh, more than you might imagine.
At any rate, they came to you, and you took a look, and you said it was clear. In fact, it did turn out to be clear, but in the video piece I saw, they said you found a couple of canisters. What were those, and where were they?
Actually, when you work, when you use technical remote viewing, it's uncannily similar to a database search or any library search. So they
had a number of followers from all over the world. David,
it's uncannily similar to a database search or any library search. So that if you go to indicate how how information is organized in the universe to begin with. We call that place from whence we derive data the matrix. That's our own, in our own vernacular.
Mm-hmm.
This library, if there is information about some topic or subject in one spot, and the information happens to lead you somewhere else that has a very similar search term, then you're going to pick that up. In this case, the term biological warfare in Iraq, the idea of an Iraqi biological warfare weapon, took us to Iraq proper, not to Kuwait City.
I see.
And there we found the biological warfare program hidden amidst the agricultural department. And I was actually the Army's biological warfare case officer. So together with Dr. Barry Ehrlich at the Armed Forces Medical Intelligence Center, we demonstrated to the National Security Council that biochemical warfare was offensive. Biochemical warfare program was ongoing in the Soviet Union. And as a result of that, we briefed the President of the United States, and we set up the BTAC, the Biological Threat Analysis Center, in Fort Detrick, Maryland, the former home of the Army's own offensive chemical warfare program, biological warfare program.
Wow. So I thought it was important that the audience understand a little background and what you have done. And that you were involved with the military. People have been, as I said, sending me faxes saying things like, you have no idea what this man was doing. He was involved with the military.
I'm quite proud of my background and the job I did for my country. And the taxpayer should note that the technology that my company possesses today, they essentially paid for.
Well, I guess we're happy about that. Listen, there's one thing that you couldn't talk about, so I've got to ask you about it. And that is, you were asked, well, you can read a mind, or you can read an area, see an area, pick a target, keep hold of it, and know what's going on. But can you go beyond that? In other words, can you actually affect somebody else's thinking? And your answer was yes, but it requires electronics, machinery, and you said I can't go into those.
We cannot do that as remote viewers. Remote viewing is generally, unless you want to get down into the quantum effects level, it is generally a passive act. Remote viewing, ESP, clairvoyance, those kinds of things. Telepathy, mind over matter, psychokinesis, the Uri Geller effect, that is the active side of the psi phenomenon. Psychotronics is the area that you're talking about right now, where ostensibly either mind combined with a machine or machine alone affects another mind or affects a body, a living thing. That area is called psychotronics.